senior writer at Sports Illustrated. It's the great Pat Forty making the big interview.
Award-winning writers, athletes, coaches, the biggest names in sports. It's the Gary Parrish Show Big Interview, presented by The Wing Guru, online at thewingguru.com.
Pat Forty, it's Gary Parrish. How you doing, man?
Hey, I'm doing well, Gary. How about you?
Everything's good in my world. I appreciate your time. I can't wait to see you again. And I want to start with a column you posted at SI.com about the wild rivalries and arguments that we have in college football right now. And right at the top of the list is the big story from last week, and that, of course, is Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher. Is it accurate to say before last week we had never seen anything like that between two coaches?
I think so. You know, I was discussing it with my friend and podcast colleague Dan Wetzel, and, you know, we were theorizing maybe when John Chaney said he was going to murder John Calipari, but that was like spur of the moment. Jimbo Fisher actually had a night to sleep on it, wake up, call a press conference, and then go thermonuclear on Saban. So I think that ratcheted it up to a whole other degree. And it wasn't just, you know, venting, screaming anger. It was, this guy's a cheater. Go dig into his past. I mean, I can't recall anything like it, and I've been doing this for 30-plus years.
So it starts with Nick Saban the night before saying that Texas A&M bought its entire recruiting class. You know, Jimbo spent a lot of time the next morning talking about we didn't break any rules and we didn't break any laws. And in fairness to Nick Saban, who might have broke a code, but he never said Jimbo Fisher broke a law or broke a rule. He just said they bought the recruiting class. What's true?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a key distinction there. He did not say that Texas A&M is out there cheating to get guys. I think he basically said that the system is so wide open right now that if you want to buy a recruiting class, you have that opportunity. You know, the loophole, or whatever you want to call it, exists where rules on what can be offered to players is so wide open that, hey, you know, just go do it if that's what you want to do. And Saban's, I think, questioning, is this what we should be doing? So it was interesting. I mean, when you use the word bought their whole recruiting class or their whole team, that certainly sounds very alarming. But, you know, the substance of the words, I'm not sure he meant it to be quite as bad as Jimbo took it.
So Nick acknowledges he reached out to Jimbo to apologize. Jimbo did not respond. Jimbo was asked about this. He said he will not respond. Our relationship is done. It's one thing when Pat Narduzzi and Lincoln Riley have a back and forth because they work in different parts of the country, different leagues. They literally don't really have to see each other or be around each other. Nick and Jimbo got to be together next week and then again at SEC Media Days. And then they got to shake hands before and after a game. How do you see that unfolding?
Yeah, boy, that's going to be the interesting part. And I will be in Destin watching eagerly to see how the interaction goes. I think it's Tuesday morning. You know, the first football coaches meeting takes place. They got to get in the same room with 12 other coaches. And presumably, you know, Greg Sankey isn't a dummy. And they're very concerned about image and projecting a unified front as a conference. So I would bet Sankey has a meeting before the meeting, so to speak, with those two to just say, look, we're going to work this out. You guys have got to figure this out, and then you've got to come out and say something to the effect that this is behind us or whatever. But if they try to tell the media, hey, we're not talking about it, it's going to be a tough sell because they are the ones that made this a public thing. It's not us.
Talking to Pat Forty from Sports Illustrated, it is one of the things I remember people telling me about Mike Slive, which is, he, you know, there was some wild things happening in the SEC, as you know, and SEC coaches knew who was doing what and when and where, but Mike Slive's orders were always, bring it to me, you know, and we'll try to handle it internally. Let's not let this stuff go public. And obviously, you know, the world has changed drastically since those days.
Yeah, but no, that was very much, that was an imperative on Slive's part, was that, you know what, we don't air our dirty laundry on each other out in public. You bring it here, we'll listen to you, we'll go to the NCAA if we have to, whatever. But that was the thing, is he hated that sort of confrontational, finger-pointing, mud-slinging stuff that had gone on quite a bit before he got there. And then, you know, that's one of the reasons he was so mad at Lane Kiffin when he was at Tennessee and he started taking shots at Urban Meyer. It's like, we don't do that. And now this is doing it, like, to such a higher level. And it's not just the vindictive nastiness of what was said, but also you're taking shots at the seven-time national champion on the, if you're Jimbo Fisher, which, again, ratchets this whole thing up to a level we just haven't seen.
I'm talking to Pat Forty from Sports Illustrated. Meantime, there was an interesting story by our friend Pete Thamel at ESPN.com earlier today where he had Greg Sankey and Scott Strickland, among others, talking on the record about the SEC, once the college football playoff contract expires in 2025, considering maybe just doing their own postseason tournament. 8-team tournament, we'll crown the SEC champion that way, make a lot of money, and that'll be how we, and we'll call ourselves a national champion. Let's start here. Do you think they would actually do that? We've heard a lot about the Power Five breaking away, but this would be almost like the SEC breaking away from everybody else. Do you think that's a realistic option?
Yeah, I mean, that was a wild story, an eyebrow raiser. Obviously, Pete is plugged in as anybody. I really have a hard time seeing it come to that. And maybe I'm underestimating folks, as I have often actually in recent years. Like, they wouldn't do that, you know. But maybe I should be thinking a little bit more cynically here. But I just think that that would be so damaging for the sport of college football. Now, I do know, I mean, Sankey is furious with the schools that blocked the expansion of the playoff. That's absolutely accurate. And, you know, there is at least certainly going to be some threatening and some blustering of, you know, we'll just do our own thing if you don't want to play ball with us. But I just think that would be calamitous for college sports as a whole if the SEC said we'll just have our own tournament and then maybe or maybe not we'll play a championship game against the best team from the rest of college football. You know, never say never, but I would be shocked if we eventually get to that point.
I theorize that if they seriously were considering this or wanted to do it, it's not something they would talk on the record about. The fact that they talked on the record about it suggests, to me at least, knowing how these things sometimes work, Greg Sankey just wanted the Big Ten and the Pac-12, those people who have been roadblocks to him ever since they took Texas and Oklahoma, he wants them to know, if you keep playing hardball with me and blocking everything I'm trying to do, we have an option that includes us saying we don't need you. We can use it if we want to. It feels like a very thinly veiled public, let's put this in your head and maybe you'll start acting differently going forward.
Yeah, I think that's a great point and a very good way to look at it. You've been around college sports long enough to know that, yes, if they're really contemplating something this massive, that's not something you just kind of trot out there. With names on the record, Greg Sankey, Scott Strickland from Florida, you know, talking about it. I mean, if you look at what happened with Texas and Oklahoma going into the league, that was absolute top secret until all of a sudden A&M got wind of it and blew the whistle. You know, that wasn't something like Greg Sankey was out there saying, yeah, we may add Texas and Oklahoma. You know, that's these sort of things, if you are serious about it, that's the kind of thing you guard that secret very, very closely. So I kind of read that the way you do, that this, as much as anything, is a flex that says, we're gonna play ball here, and we're not just going to sit and let you guys tell the SEC what you can and can't do. And if you do try it, here's what we could do to you.
I'm talking to Pat Forty from Sports Illustrated. This is a very simple question with a possibly impossible answer, but I get asked it all the time, and I'm sure you do too, so I'd be interested in your response. What does college athletics look like in 10 years?
Yeah, it is almost impossible to answer that, I think. I feel like we are definitely heading to a FBS at least pull away. That's going to be soon. Possibly a Power 5 pull away. Possibly a Power 2 pull away. And, you know, the Big Ten and the SEC annex some more schools that, you know, are really high wattage, high media market sort of programs, like USC, Clemson, a Florida State, what have you, from the other conferences. I still see roadblocks and problems to that. You know, if you have a Super 20 six, Super 30 team collection, people are going to lose that aren't used to losing. And I'm not sure you want to devise something that has that much weight at the top. You know, I just think that you're setting yourself up for, you know, almost too much competitiveness, and that might be a tough sell. So it's going to be different. It's going to be more consolidated. I think non-revenue sports will continue to be in trouble. I sure hope they don't screw up the NCAA basketball tournament along the way. But all things are on the table, I think, at this point.
Wrapping up with Pat Forty from Sports Illustrated. I think most people know you live in Louisville. You've called that your home for a long, long time. And now you've got Kenny Payne as the head basketball coach of the Cardinals, while John Calipari remains the head basketball coach of the Kentucky Wildcats. And it has been assumed for a while that eventually John would enroll the number one prospect in the class of 2023, D.J. Wagner, DeJuan's son, Milt's grandfather. But now Kenny Payne, who is a former teammate of Milt, close with Milt. You've got the William Wesley angle. It looks like it's an incredible recruiting battle between those two programs in your state. How much of a topic of conversation is that going to be over the next year?
Oh, it's heated for sure. You know, and I mean, it's very hard to get a read on it because the Wagner camp isn't talking too much. They did a little bit like last month, but now I think they've gone back to shutting down, and Kenny Payne's been pretty quiet so far. He hadn't been out doing a lot of meet and greet. And so it's fascinating. I mean, hey, you remember 20 years ago, 21 or 22 years ago, when DeJuan Wagner was the recruiting focus and John Calipari got him because he recruited him harder than Denny Crum did, and everything that went into that. And now with his son, the next generation of it. And, you know, I don't think you can discount the influence of Wes here. And I think Wes is really personally staked to Kenny Payne, not just getting that job, but succeeding in the job. He and Calipari have had a great relationship for a long time, very productive relationship on both sides of that equation. But Cal doesn't need the help as much as Kenny Payne needs the help getting started here. So, I mean, if I'm going to just throw out a guess, I'm thinking he's coming to Louisville. But, boy, oh, boy, it's going to be fascinating to watch how this thing goes down in the next several months.
That is Pat Forty from Sports Illustrated. Make sure you read him at SI.com. He's on Twitter, at @ByPatForty. You're the best, buddy. I appreciate your time. Thanks for being here.
Hey, anytime, GP. Thank you.
I'll see you. That's Pat Forty from Sports Illustrated. The DJ Wagner thing is going to be wild. And we've talked about this before. If you remember a few years ago, John Calipari had the number one ranked prospect in the class of 2019 basically locked up. Everybody assumed James Wiseman. And not just assumed, it was just sort of understood. He was going to Kentucky.
Yep.
Then Memphis hires a former player in Penny Hardaway who has a relationship with James Wiseman. Boom. John Calipari loses the number one player in the class.
Mm-hmm.
And now it would be just four classes later. Exact same situation. He's got the number one player in the class on lock because he coached Wani, because he hired Milt. You know, Arthur Barclay, OG, is somebody I've kept in touch with all these years later. He's still, like, I'm really, I love the way that story has developed. Like, the people around DJ Wagner, it's the people who were around 20 years ago. It's Wani, it's OG, it's Milt, it's family. People who have been, they're known, you hear the phrase all the time, no new friends. Like, there's no new people connected to this. The same people who were around DJ Wagner from the day he was born are still handling this. DJ Wagner isn't going to some prep school or some basketball academy, or they're building some, you know, goofy team around him. He goes to Camden High, just like his dad went to Camden High, just like his grandfather went to Camden High. They're about to be the first three-generation McDonald's All-Americans in the history of the world. And everybody just assumed that DJ was going to Kentucky. But then Louisville hires a former player, just like Memphis hired a former player, who has a relationship with the family. Kenny Payne and Milt have been tight since college. And Wes is the other person in that relationship. So Wes has strong allegiances to John Calipari. That's among the ways that John was able to get in with Milt and DeJuan and the Wagner family back then. You know, Wes was the entry point. So Wes and John have gone back forever and are still tied to this day. But Wes is tighter with Kenny Payne. Kenny Payne's his boy. And so it's going to be interesting to see how that goes down. And it's got to be an uncomfortable situation for Wes, because what do you do? On one side, John Calipari. On the other side, Kenny Payne. And I know Pat, and he knows those programs better than anybody, said that, you know, Kenny needs more help right now than John. I'm not exactly sure that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Kenny Payne's not under immense pressure right now.
That's a good point.
John Calipari is under immense pressure right now.
That fan base is restless.
They have turned on him.
Yeah.
Now, it's not like, you know, he's got a preseason top five team. So they could go win a national championship and then everything's good again. But he's had a terrible season, backed it up with a first-round loss to St. Peter's. And if he were to miss on DJ Wagner and have another, like, first-round exit, there'd be people who'd want him fired. I mean, there are people who already want him fired.
Yeah.
And so I actually could argue John Calipari needs DJ Wagner more than Kenny Payne does, because John Calipari needs his fans to calm down.